Unity, the strength and assured success.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another fabulous edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future, live from paradise. Welcome to Fantasy Island. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show from New Zealand. Proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. Is the world headed towards a single global currency, is the headline. Many economists, including Paul Krugman and Noriel Robini, have argued that the European Monetary Union is in trouble because of the fiscal difficulties for a few of its member countries, and some have predicted that the euro will fail. Now, the concept of the euro failing and the US dollar failing has all been done by design, unfortunately. This has been seen for a long, long time. And, of course, they're trying to play it down. I was watching Voice of America last night on Triangle TV here in New Zealand. And guess what I saw? I saw some fabulous talking heads talking about how wonderful the 1.7% growth in consumer spending was and how it might be a great first sign of that recovery gaining speed. And when you think about it, it's like one person being whipped trying to drag a 10-ton boulder by itself, and then that guy managing to make the boulder rock a tiny little bit, like he might be getting somewhere or getting flattened by it as it rolls on top of him. That's what kind of economic situation we got going on here. And even worse than that, the fact that apparently the media is kind of covering up the fact that the radiation in Canada, Northwest America, California, radiation levels are just as high as they are in Japan. Independent scientist Lorraine Murray, MA and PhD, has stated in an exclusive April 4 interview with Alfred Lambremont Weber that the effects of tectonic nuclear war against the populations and breadbasket of North America, Canada, the United States, Hawaii, and Mexico, are being internationally covered up by the administrations of Barack H. Obama in the United States and Prime Minister Stephen Harper in Canada. Whether or not things are intentional, you can certainly see the effect, irradiating the breadbaskets of the world. The globalists have been planning a population reduction for quite some time using staged crises or real crises in order to reduce the population by up to 85 to 90%. Some even want it reduced down by 99%. Who knows? It's amazing what can happen when you've got psychopaths running the world. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the now glow-in-the-dark island paradise of New Zealand, irradiated, of course. But those of you in the United States who've been having your food irradiated for all these years to kill all the piled-up bacteria from all the poorly treated and poorly culled cows that live in nothing but filth and get treated on antibiotics all day long, this is nothing new for you. I have a very special guest on the line here, ladies and gentlemen, and to be honest with you, I'm unfamiliar with his work, save one credential. He's made it onto G. Edward Griffin's Hall of Honor for Freedom Force International, and from the list of people that are on there, you have to do something very special for humanity in order to make that list. His name is Richard Reynolds, and he joins us now. Richard, are you on the line there?
I am there. Hello, Vinny.
Richard, please, I'm dying to know who you are and what it is you've done that's so fabulous as to get yourself into the Hall of Honor.
Well, it does sound intriguing, yes. I didn't know about the Hall of Honor. Well, I'm what's called a guerrilla gardener. There are many people like me all over the world doing similar kind of stuff, and what we do is we garden without boundaries. We garden where we see the opportunity, typically public land that has been unloved, forgotten about, abandoned, and we take it on and make it great again.
So the whole idea, really, of having all this unused space, this is what I find strange, is that real estate's at an effing premium, and heaps of it goes unused.
Exactly. It is insane. It, just this day, here I am in central London, and this pub landlord, he got in touch, and he took me up onto his roof, and we looked down behind his pub into a garden a few walls away. It was like a jungle in central London. And this is where we should be growing food. This is where we should be living and breathing. There's a place for a jungle, and it is not for me anyway, or for him, in the center of a city. This is too precious to be neglected like that.
Well, absolutely, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of support, because apparently there's a big junglist movement in London.
Yeah. Well, we should be having jungle parties in there, and at the moment, the only thing that's in there is too wild for the rest of us, and we need to live happily side by side with the wildlife, and in that particular patch, they've gone too far.
Is it kind of me, or does the structure of a city inherently make them not capable of sustaining themselves?
I don't agree with that. I think they can sustain themselves. The problem, the thing that gets in the way, is bureaucracy and fear, okay? So now, if people who own this land didn't fear what might happen if somebody went on it and just started sorting it out, if they didn't fear that we were going to start trying to own it, or that we were going to sue them if we hurt ourselves, or if we were going to cause trouble for other people, then they'd just let us get on with it. There wouldn't be a need for gorillas. And if people like me didn't fear that going out there and making a place more beautiful would get us in trouble, or our work would be destroyed or vandalized, then more people would be doing it. And that's why I'm here talking about it, because I'm hoping somehow perhaps to capture someone's imagination and make them think, you know what, I could do this too. There's a location near me, I'm going to go and do it. This is the time of the year, in the Northern Hemisphere at least, this is the time of the year to really start thinking about sowing stuff and making a difference.
Well, there is the important need for food. Apparently, the EU, a recent article, I think out of Press TV, has hired 50,000 police to handle food riots. And we also have all these legislations being passed in the United States. I think it was HR 510 or something. That means you have to kind of register or get a license to have your own home garden.
Yeah.
And under penalty of like $5,000 US fines. The food supply itself is kind of being attacked in a lot of ways, and now, not to mention the Gulf of Oil Kano crisis killing off all the fish life in there, and I'm sure this Japanese nuclear crisis is going to kill an awful lot in the Pacific.
They've poisoned the spinach and all sorts. I mean, this is the thing. We have taken for granted for too long the land. You know, with all the headlines talking about other resources, which are precious, I think sometimes the land gets forgotten about, and yet we should be growing stuff on it wherever we see the opportunity. And even if some of these places are too filthy and disgusting because they are in a polluted part of the city, I still put plants on there. We've got cabbages, raspberries, strawberries. They, even if we don't eat them, they are a symbol to the passerby that perhaps in a cleaner part of the city, perhaps in their back garden that they're neglecting, they could do something that begins to mean we're less dependent on these industrialized food systems and the like. Bit by bit.
Well, the processing things that our products that we buy are so huge that what comes out the other end has almost nothing in common with what went in the other. It doesn't matter, right, that it's all sprayed with pesticide and it's all irradiated and it's all been antibiotic'd out and it's all got pus and stuff in it, you know, or a meat patty has 1,000 different cows in it kind of thing. That doesn't seem to matter to some people. But when it comes to their fruit and their vegetables, something that they can actually grow on their own for free without the necessity to go out working and spending an immense amounts of time to earn money so that you can buy these things, you can just have them growing.
Well, you can, right? And any gardener can do that. You know, that's what gardening in general is about. But what guerrilla gardening is doing in these places where you don't have permission, particularly if they're public and visible, you know, roadside verges and the like, is there is a extra element to it, which is about the sharing and the visibility of it, the encounters you have. You end up, the gardening is almost sometimes like a performance. It's a reason for people to stop and talk and discuss and ask, why are you doing this? What's going on? It's at night. You're digging up the roadside. What is this all about? And then you can start getting into the subjects that matter to them or that matter to me, whether that's about food, whether that's about the wildlife, making a more friendly environment for pollinating insects, or whether it's just about making people feel less fearful about these shared spaces, making them feel like there are like-minded people in their communities. Gardening has all these benefits, particularly if you do it in public. And that is what I find so exciting about it, whether your food is your thing or whether a social space is your thing. Just get out there with your tools, with some seeds, and these conversations will start happening. There is something very, ironically, kind of disarming about being a guerrilla gardener. It makes you kind of accessible to people, I think.
And it also makes you non-threatening. I mean, it's not like you're a gardener of marijuana in some deep bush armed with a shotgun and bear traps to protect your stash, eh?
although there are guerrillas who do that kind of thing, it's a very broad, loose movement. And in my book, I write about guerrilla gardening in 30 different countries, and some of them are growing more illicit crops than others.
Oh, yeah. Yes?
People get their highs in all sorts of different ways. For me, I get my high from seeing the lavender bloom. I get my high from just weeding, you know? I love weeding. We're going to have a royal weeding day here in the UK. There's a very big, special royal weeding, and we are going to be weeding. I'm going to try and get the nation weeding. We are given a special holiday by the government to weed.
Really?
Yeah,
mate.
That's my plan. April the 29th, the Royal Weeding Day. There's more information on my website at guerrillagardening.org.
Guerrillagardening.org, ladies and gentlemen, check that out. One thing I was thinking about, you said on the verges of the road, in New Zealand, virtually every verge, is basically just bare grass. And the council spends a lot of money making sure that they, every week, mow that grass.
Okay, this is crazy.
And every month, spray poisons around the corners of that grass to ensure that it doesn't hurt the concrete, which is getting pushed up and cracked anyway from the trees that are planted within that grass.
This is making me very sad. This is making me sad and angry. This is craziness. And do you know what the gorilla gardener must do in this environment? Is you have to go in there and cut the grass out. This isn't about sprinkling a few little seeds here and there. It sounds to me like they'll be killed by the mower and by the poison. What you've got to do is go in there, cut a bed right out of it, put something else in, and just hold on to that territory. Show it love. Make it into a garden. We have a transport authority here in London who are surprisingly responsible for a lot of lawns and mowing. Rather like it sounds you've got there in New Zealand. And I go onto these roundabouts, and I can't take on the whole lot. It's too big. But I start cutting the edges off, cutting around the fences, cutting around the bottom of the signs, and putting in tulips and lavender and lettuces and all sorts. And then they leave it. They leave it because the mower man has less to do. You know, everyone's a winner.
Yeah. I always thought that if you do something just for the heck of it that benefits everybody, basically sometimes people just don't get in your way. Unless, of course, you're doing something that's for most people's benefit, which a few people don't like. Like trying to get rid of fiat currency, for example.
Right, yeah. Now, generally people like it. You get things like, oh, you know, I prefer concrete, somebody said to me once. And it's like, well, how do you argue with that? But they're the weirdos. They might think we're the weirdos gardening, where we don't own it, and where we're not being paid for it, and where it might get stolen. But, no, I think the few, the minority who don't get it, they're the weirdos. And we're slowly bringing people round.
For me, I'm kind of thinking about it in terms of food shortage and crisis, and by the sheer importance of it. I mean, if we're talking about this year or something having the highest food prices ever recorded, and taking the long view through history, back in the day, everybody was growing their own food during the first depression. Approximately 90% of people were living in rural areas growing their own food. And still during that depression, the 10% of people who lived in cities and didn't, something like 10 million, 14 million people in the US starved to death. And today, far out, we have 90% of people living in cities not growing any food. You know, like the situation is that desperate if just an economic collapse, let alone a food supply shortage, both at the same time.
The original gorilla gardener, before the word gorilla gardener even existed, the oldest recorded guy I have come across was gardening land that he didn't have permission, and rallying people around to join him and do this was doing it because food prices were rising steeply and they couldn't afford to buy it, and there was all this land, and they just started growing veg on it. And these were called the diggers. It was 1649, and England, St. George's Hill, and a man called Gerard Winstanley went up that hill and started sowing food. And it was the rising food prices and the sense of injustice in England in the 17th century that motivated him to do it. And you know what? He lives on in history. He wrote, he inspired people, and he lives on. And he inspires all sorts of different political movements. But he is also an inspiration to me as a gorilla gardener. And that was food that did it. Things are not changing enough.
Well, you know what? You might be right. There has to be some kind of extreme motivation factor, like a food 9/11, before people will wake up to the fact that they need to be growing food everywhere all the time just to survive.
I can see what you're saying. I'm kind of less into the shock thing. I think my vision is that people are going to discover the joy of doing it. I'm a great optimist, and I think that with fun, with a sense of getting together with people, discovering that people aren't quite what you think they are because you only understand your neighbors through the TV or through the web, but by actually meeting people, having these conversations, that great things can grow from that. And if it's about it being an economic thing to start with food prices going up a bit, and so people begin to think, oh, perhaps I'll start having a little go myself, you know what? It isn't going to be about saving them money, because it is very... It can cost a lot of money to grow this stuff. You know, the supermarkets have got to the point where it's so industrialized, it can actually be quite cheap. But they'll realize it's not about the money. It's about those connections. It's about the emotional benefit you get from it. And then things begin to change. And then perhaps actually you can begin to make it viable economically as well. But we've got to win people around with their hearts, I think, first, rather than their fear.
I was thinking of a propaganda mechanism, because you can use both of those different platforms. Either we do it for the love of it, or we do it because we're afraid of the consequence. You know, like climate change is promoted as the with fear, for example.
I don't think a lot of the promotion works, because I don't think it's a scare thing. I think it's sometimes, you know, it's counterproductive. People just drive the 4x4 even more because they're like, hell, I'm just going to, you know, drive off the edge of this cliff because they're so scared. It's hard to confront the fear. I think we've got to change tack.
Well, the thing about fear is that it stops thinking from happening, you know, whereas I believe what you're advocating is that a more understanding involvement, right, so that but as a result, without enormous crises to automatically motivate people from point one, which is like being all right, sweet as, and then point two, which is very afraid, and then automatically doing something about it, I think you'd rather you'll pardon the pun here, you'd rather the movement grow organically.
Yeah, I think that is fair. It's about entertaining people, getting them to like the idea.
Sometimes get
people doing things without even realizing the good that comes of it. You know, I know some people, they get into guerrilla gardening because they just like the mischief. They like the mischief, the criminality. That's what appeals. It's exciting. The fact that they're actually doing some gardening and doing some weeding and picking up litter and making the place look nicer, that's a side effect. That's a bonus. No, you know, it's because it's criminal. And that's very satisfying to see people, they're doing stuff for one reason, they're getting something else out of it, and then slowly some of them realize, you know what, I like this digging thing. This digging is good. This makes me feel good. And then they become gardeners. Not all of them, but
like
some of them.
You're like the Banksy of gardening.
It has been said, but there is a difference. There is a difference. Banksy.
Oh, well, my very special guest is Richard Reynolds, the Banksy of gardening. I'll coin him that now. And we'll be right back after the break at gorillagardener.org.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. My very special guest from GorillaGardener.org is Richard Reynolds. Welcome back.
Hello there, Vinnie. I should just point out it's GorillaGardening.org.
So it's not gorilla.garden.ning.com.
There's loads. It doesn't really matter where you end up out there. There's loads of gorilla gardening stuff on the web. All sorts of Facebook pages, websites, blogs. You know, something's going on near wherever your listeners are listening. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, you've been doing plenty of videos, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, I record what I get up to, and sometimes the cameras are there, and sometimes I'm traveling around. I was in the Midwest in February and meeting gorilla gardeners in Bloomington and Chicago and Indianapolis.
Wow. Hey, it's kind of spreading, you know, like weeds.
It is an organic movement, quite literally, and I am out there sowing a few seeds and watering the idea a bit, and it continues to spread. I mean, the credit should go to Liz Christie and the Green Gorillas back in the 70s in New York. They did amazing things back then, and little did I realize it when I started doing this 7 years ago. You know, these things have been out there for decades, in some cases hundreds of years, and what we are now doing, the power of the web is to join this all together and to connect people and then inspire people to work out how they want to do it, where they live, you know, what's right for them and their landscape and their neighbours.
It allows you to kind of fertilize the idea to a certain extent and make sure that everybody's full of beans and, you know, acting kind of as companion plants to one another.
I think you clearly speak like a gardener. You know the environment, the social and horticultural environment that we're trying to create. Absolutely. I am with you, Vinny.
And of course, it needs to be grown organically. Without advertising campaigns and stuff like that, because this is the cool thing about guerrilla gardening. I'm just kind of like...
Well, you know what? Shall I tell you a tale? I met a guerrilla gardener who actually never used plants at all, but she just used chemicals, and she used chemical fertilizers, and she went round her village in Devon, in England, and only put the chemicals on half of the plants in each tub, because she loved to see the impact they'd have and the confusion that this would create on the town council, who would normally be looking after the flowers. So she was, I would say, a particularly mischievous chemical gorilla. Not typical, but still, you know, caring in her own special way.
So you're talking about guerrilla chemical warfare.
That is guerrilla chemical warfare. You're absolutely right, Vinny. It's amazing. It's a very diverse movement. I'm constantly surprised. You know, some guerrilla gardeners, they're in their 90s. My grandmother, 93, on the front line. I met a lady, she's 80. It was such a big deal for her to guerrilla garden that when she had her birthday cake, the cake was the shape of her guerrilla garden. Flowers, road signs, the works. I'd love to show you pictures, Vinny, but this is radio.
Well, if you join us via Skype now, and in fact, ladies and gentlemen, I just found this out yesterday, and I talked to Dr. Paul Connett about this from Fluoride Action Movement. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, Richard, but you can now share your desktop, like your computer screen, across Skype. Like, people can just watch what you're doing on your computer. You can just share it just like a webcam.
Amazing.
Isn't that brilliant? Now, that opens up all sorts of possibilities. It means that you could do full slideshow presentations via Skype to whole audiences half a world away. All they need is a projector and a speaker.
We should set this up, Vinny. This would save a lot of time and a lot of air miles.
And this is the thing about being a guerrilla-minded person, is that you use your enemy's strengths against them. Now, if they are all spending all their money and flying around in private jets and big cars and all of that kind of stuff, then we don't even need to leave home and actually broadcast for free.
That's it. And just get that message out there. Get that message out there. Leapfrog over these obstacles of time.
Exactly.
And distance.
It's the difference. I interviewed a man named Bob Malamede, who's a professor. He discovered a thing called endocannabinoids, in other words, cannabinoids from within, one of the active ingredients in marijuana that your body naturally produces. And what he thinks is that it facilitated our evolution, and we've got two types of people now, what he calls forward-looking people, which he calls flips, and backward-looking people, which he calls blips. And at the moment, the blips are all basically in control, and they're trying to keep everybody looking backwards, looking into the past and looking into fear, whereas the flips are just kind of like, well, all of that kind of stuff doesn't really matter. I mean, we can affect our reality right here, right now. Why don't we? What is there to stop us from getting our species on track? You know, and I think that what we're going through right now as a period of history is the accelerated process of change in the human race, whereby the flips will eventually take control over the blips and put them back where they need to be.
Well, that's a complicated theory. I think that I would think of those blips or flips as basically it's the generation who gets how to use the modern information technology, and we are... I see it in my day job. We are leapfrogging over a generation who are not using those tools, so that I can get out there with this guerrilla gardening message without it being a business, without significant backing. It's just it's a hobby that has gone crazy, and that is because, as you say, the guerrilla media, one could describe it as, I suppose. It isn't the traditional channels, although... Guys like you and the traditional media, it helps. They still reach a lot of people, and they help get this message out there and normalize what people are doing, make it more acceptable. So it's a bit of both. I'm a great pragmatist.
Well, I think it's conditioning, right? And if people can be brainwashed into believing a lie, then my assumption would be that they could be brainwashed again back into believing the truth.
Well, you don't need to see it as brainwashing, though. It's just about education.
We can put nice words on it and euphemisms and all of that, but I prefer to see myself and my agenda, even if it's a good thing, I prefer to see it as if I'm the bad guy, because that way I will think of myself as a bad guy trying to do a good thing, so I'll have a lot of moral reprimand on myself. But if I was to see myself as solely the good guy, there'd be no limits to what I could justify in the name of my belief or my cause. I could be capable of terrible atrocity.
Okay, kind of, yeah, if you have that, perhaps even guilt, then it helps question what one does more seriously. I kind of know what you mean about borrowing the tools of, one might say, a darker side. I mean, the thing with guerrilla gardening is we are appropriating the language of destruction and warfare, but we're doing so to be deliberately provocative and entertaining. And I know that that does upset some people, but I think the majority kind of get it. Chapter 7 in my book is called Propaganda. It's all about the message, whether that's conversation with a passerby or creating some kind of notice or getting out there and speaking to people like you. I think these things are very important, and some people see them as the dark arts of marketing and brainwashing and propaganda, but we need to understand how all these things work so that we can use them for good.
Well, yes. I mean, and I think that media and repetition and all of these different Bernaysian kind of propaganda techniques have been used for quite some time. And I think that if we are going to change the mindset, we need to stop trying to spread so much propaganda and start to try and spread a bit more gander that's more proper.
You know, well, I'm a big fan of ganders, having grown up in a house full of geese, so proper geese would be a wonderful antidote to all the noise that's out there coming out of propaganda machines. So, yes, I agree.
Almost as much honking as busy London city streets, or at least not for long. Article here came out of Reuters, I believe. EU to ban all cars from cities by 2050.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that one.
I don't believe that either. It's like, what, are you kidding me? Well, they're talking about an end of private transportation, basically. They want everybody to kind of be in these little slave block smart growth cells along railway lines and stuff.
Sounds
like
to me
that.
Like an April Fool's. There was one going around London saying that they were going to close, the mayor was going to close every street from traffic for a day every month when the Olympics come here next year. This will not be happening. I'm sure of it. Instead, what will be happening is more and more people will be guerrilla gardening. We have the International Sunflower Guerrilla Gardening Day on May the 1st. Now, down in New Zealand, not a great time to be planting sunflowers, but in the Northern Hemisphere, for your listeners there, well, it's a great time. And we had over 6,000 people last year. Salt Lake City were amongst those represented, planting sunflowers in their neighborhood, wherever they see the opportunity. And like kind of scatter bombing, some work and some don't. But those that do are gloriously satisfying. So I encourage your listeners to think about that one. With more information at the gorillagardening.org website.
Yep. I would think that...
That was a propaganda message, Vinny. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely, this propaganda message brought to you in part by the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's not evil. It's just gander that's proper. Well, you know, I think we've got to be sort of cheeky about this. You know, this is a word that I think really, really does envisage a very guerrilla style of how you do things. You don't do it to be mean or nasty or to accomplish something evil or something. You're just doing it to be cheeky.
Yeah. Shall I tell you about some of the maverick elements within the movement? Because what I've been focusing on, because it's my agenda, is the transformation of these abandoned, neglected spaces, you know, fighting the filth with forks and flowers. But there are some guerrilla gardeners for whom that's not the target. They don't mind that. And a great success in the UK has been the pothole guerrilla gardening, where gardens are put in the road, in the little holes after the winter, and they last for a few minutes. But what they do, if the gardener is clever enough to get a photograph, is they are fighting the potholes. And in our Chancellor's budget speech, he announced that he would be funding the repair of potholes. The media laughed. They thought this was trivial. But I cite it as a success for the pothole guerrilla gardening agenda there. It's incredible what guerrilla gardening can be used to change.
Well, it's a great psyop to play on people is the thing, a psychological warfare operation on the current mindset that says, I have to get every bit of food that I ever eat from a supermarket or a fast food restaurant, and I can't grow it, I can't do anything. It's sort of a return to what we used to have as a society, which was gardens in pretty much everybody's backyard. You know, food growing everywhere, food out your ears. There's a transition towns. I presume you've heard of them.
Yeah,
started out in Totnes, very much trying to minimise their effect and food security. Right, this is something that doesn't get debated in Parliament in New Zealand, and nobody has a policy on it. We don't even have so much as a store of food to last us a week if they all run out. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from England is Richard Reynolds from GorillaGardening.org. And we'll be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Don't have a garden. Would you start one if you thought you'd be starving? I like my potatoes fried or boiled, mashed or baked in a pie or foil. Picture good health, the answer lies in soil. Yep. Not in labs, your plants are tied in coils and DNA spliced till they resemble something else with lies so nice that end in plundered wealth and places that spread in a way few can trace to poison the third world and slay the human race. In the guise of progress, but it's manipulation, the scraping hand, raping lands and crippling nations. And what about this theory? There's a chance. Go figure, more carbon in the atmosphere makes plants grow bigger. Crazy, huh? That's not what we're all taught, but many lies live on while many truths fall short. What are we gonna eat when it's banned in the street, when the land is depleted and the sand at our feet?
Can't get high, can't pick up the yard, turn the lawn into a garden.
What we gonna speak to the clan of elite? What the clan is to cheat us, but we stand by the seat.
Time to get hard, time to pick up the yard, time alone.
show with no shoes and no shirt, and I have no time for people who throw dirt and label us water wasters. Gardens can't survive unless we use water to keep plants alive.
It's time to save seeds, cause the seeds that are saved and that only run bunker in no way and no way for us. It's for the Bilderberg and rotten shady elite. They try to poison our food and rock our babies to sleep or cop an ADD and pop an 80 a week. You're behaving like sheep ladies, shopping lazy and weak. They kill their owners now cause they've bought all the banks. I heard a farmer walk the planks for saving water in tanks. Sounds like they don't want us to look after the ground right. Stuff them, get at their drum and bang it under your downpipe. Hunt the kick up a storm, dig up your lawn and plant seeds fast. The weeds fast and feeling that sheep will can't eat grass. It's all ESP like a bending spoon. It's impending doom, it can end at noon. If you're ready, but I won't wait for eggs to hatch. You'll be debating what to eat from my veggie patch. I'm getting exercise and vitamin D from the sun. I like the vitamin C, what my seeds have become. In a year or two, when severely screwed and money drawn, you'll be G's up, hose down too, and digging up your lawn.
Remember, the best kind of garden is an organic garden. Chemical pesticides and herbicides which support unethical, destructive and corrupt companies ruin your soil and eventually your health. Also, when you dig up your lawn, don't sell your lawnmower, because one day you may need to convert it into a generator.
And that little song there was by an artist named Trillian, who's from New Zealand but is currently living in an undisclosed location. Welcome back to my very special guest, Richard Reynolds from London. What do you think of the song?
Well, it was quite inspiring, wasn't it? I can imagine that playing in the background when you're out there gardening. Get it on the ghetto blaster. Get a little crowd round. It's got a good vibe. I like it.
Well, you know, and this is what I think is happening now. The reason why everybody's movements, not just guerrilla gardening, but pretty much everybody in any kind of movement that's wanting to do something good, is now accelerating exponentially because they're all starting to collaborate and help each other out.
Yeah, that is happening. There's an event, a really exciting event in Sweden this summer called Future Perfect, which is a festival of sustainable thinking. So there's going to be a bit of music there, but they're getting professors over. They're getting activists, they're getting artists. It's for about 3 days in the north of Sweden where the sun barely sets at that time of the year. And it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of it. I'm very excited to be going. Future Perfect in Sweden.
Well,
perhaps you can come, Vinny. Can you join us there?
Well, I don't know.
Track.
Depends whether or not we've both died of thyroid cancer by that point.
hopefully not quite that quickly. The radiation clouds hopefully blowing in a different direction, or hopefully not blowing at all. They'll have got a lid on it by then.
Yeah. I mean, just according to a recent article, where is it? America and EU agree raise radiation levels for food. This is on March 28th, 2011. April 3rd, 2011, by Alexander Higgins, citing COP Online and Xander News, stating that a similar rule change was occurring in the European Union. So all of this kind of stuff. They're saying that the very, very low radiation level tolerances that we have now are actually 100 times higher than they originally told us, so it's nothing to worry about.
Great. Good news. Good news coming out of Europe. Brilliant.
Yeah. You know, there's no cause for alarm.
No. I'm pretty relaxed about it. I think in the scale of things, we've got more to worry about than a bit of radiation.
Yep. I, in principle, I agree with you. Because, well, basically, we've got not just a radiation crisis, we've got an everything crisis.
Well, so you've got to start somewhere. I think, I mean, how many people are dying from the radiation at the moment? It's not too bad, is it? Got to think positive about this. Try and do things that one can actually have an effect on. That's why I think, like, focus on what you can physically do, and then try and avoid getting too stressed about the things that you really can't.
Well, you're absolutely
not, certainly
right.
Not very quickly, anyway. And that's why gardening is the therapy. It's the therapy for the stresses that may be getting to you about other things in this world. You know, another nuclear power station blows up. What's the solution? Garden. You'll feel less stressed about it.
You know what? I think you're right. As long as every single problem that comes along doesn't overshadow all of the problems that come along that you can start solving yourself. I'd like to thank you very much, Richard, for coming on with us tonight. And you have stayed up pretty late to be on the show, so thank you very much for your...
My pleasure, Vinny. All the very best. Good speaking with you.
All right, cheers. There he goes, Richard Reynolds from GorillaGardening.org in the UK, ladies and gentlemen. And we will be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Vinnie with a Y is the most important question you can ask. On the Vinnie Eastwood Show, we do like to give a lot of plug play to, well, you wouldn't call them so much as influential as you would inspirational people who have amazing stories to tell. Incredible experiences, and it's just dang interesting to listen to, quite frankly, and I try to give those people a little bit more plug play than mainstream media will ever do. On Kiwi Collaborators today, Dr. Tony Minervino from the healing business here in Auckland, New Zealand. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Actually, you know, I think inspirational people are influential. I think they're the most influential people today because everyone wants to be inspired. Inspiration is such a more exciting frequency to be in than fear and apprehension and confusion. You know, people need to be inspired that they're okay. And that everything that's going on in the world is perfect, exactly the way it is. There's no last-minute thing to do or there's no last-minute thing to get done. You know, we've prepared our whole lives for this. And who knows, we've been preparing countless lives for this. So there's nothing to worry about. Everything is perfectly in alignment and perfectly integrated. And we're all, at one and the same time, a part of a perfect whole and the whole thing.
Well, you know, it seems to me that we kind of fit in, even if we don't fit. You know what I'm saying? We somehow find a way, because it's like if you're there at all, it means that you obviously must fit somewhere. Otherwise, there would be no reason for your friggin' existence.
In a multidimensional infinite universe, which this is, everything is experientially available. You know, so while everyone is an essential part of a perfectly integrated whole, you can still when you act out of your subconscious program, experience not fitting in. Right? And it's important to realize that, you know, we acquired our 3D program, most of it before the age of two. We had both our parents' program, which they got from their parents, which they got from their parents. And essentially, anyone that was bigger, stronger, more capable of surviving than ourselves became a source of information about what this reality is about and how it works. And by the age of seven, the state-sponsored educational system furthered our program by teaching us such things as seeing is believing, which means if you can see it, it might be true. But if you can't see it, obviously it's not true. So anything you can't see, you don't believe. You know, except of course, for the whole religious story, which totally disempowers the individual.
Well, you know, and it strikes me you can't see what you can't believe in some cases as well, simply because either A1, you just don't have the conceptual possibility of even understanding what it is you're seeing, so therefore you don't even see it at all. And this is the kind of problem that we have in our society, where people have the blinders on to the point that they are walking off a freaking cliff. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My remarkably fabulous special guest from the Awareness Party is Dr. Tony Minervino. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there to drink my wine.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to come and take it all. It's what happens when you live in a world where, for some reason, people have forgotten that they're connected to each other and to the planet that they live on, right? It's when you don't fulfill your role in the circle that the circle breaks off and becomes a line that ends to nowhere. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Speaking of ending in nowhere... And my very special guest from the New Zealand Awareness Party, which is not a political party, it's a political movement, as they say. It's Tony Minervino. Welcome back, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Benny. Yeah, the Awareness Party is very definitely not a political party. We don't field candidates or anything. What our objective is to wake up people to the realization that, you know, we do have problems, and we are the solution. So once we went to the realization that we can't continue doing things the way we're doing them, we can make the decisions that allow us to start acting in a sustainable way, one that is not based on competition but cooperation, one that's not based on isolation and protection but community. You know, community is the way forward. As you know, I'm a chiropractor. But I realized back in 1996 that I was able to help people get just so far in terms of experiencing health and a sense of well-being and no further. And I knew something wasn't shifting. And I asked the big question, so what isn't shifting? And what I realized is what isn't shifting is consciousness. You know, if people continue to see things the same way and make the same choices and perform the same actions, choose the same courses of action, they're going to keep creating the same thing that they're creating. And I realized that, you know, while my intention was to heal people, actually I was enabling them, because I was enabling them to continue doing things the way they're doing, and then they come to me periodically and I would undo the physical manifestations that are showing up in their body, which are reflecting back to them the frequency of reality they're creating. Because every thought we entertain, every action that we perform affects not only us, but it affects the whole reality. And our most intimate reflection of the reality we're creating is our body. In fact, wherever our thinking is creating restriction and limitation in our life, it shows up in a corresponding area of the body. The body is always functioning perfectly. Essentially, people do not need to heal. They're already whole and complete. All we need to do is let go of the programming and everything that separates us from experiencing our wholeness. The most important thing today is mind-heart coherence, getting the mind in the same frequency as the heart. Because the mind just figures, it's a computer, but the heart knows. And it's the heart that's connected up to our expanded self and the whole of reality.
What I was wondering for a moment is that, is a human mind in its limited capacity, like let's say, for example, one human mind can't contain all knowledge of all human minds at the same time, can it, sort of thing? I mean, there's possibilities of traveling to other planes, and there's been a lot of research well documented, and it's my understanding, a lot of latent psychic ability within the human brain that's still untapped. And my thoughts is that if you're going to try and understand reality as a whole, you should approach it with the knowledge that it's not going to be an easy thing to do. And you may experience some difficulty in trying to attain a proper understanding.
There's definitely a distinction to be made between what is and what you perceive as being what is. Okay, there's the whole thing. You can't possibly comprehend the whole thing until you are the whole thing, which requires you to totally release your identification with the individualized ego and allow the consciousness to expand to encompass the whole of creation. Because the mind is actually the field of being. There's no such place called the void where there's nothing, where one day a pea-sized particle of matter of incredible mass showed up and then for some reason exploded, and 94 millionths of a second later, the universe as we know it was born. That's a nonsense story. That's the science nonsense story in contrast to the religious nonsense story that God created everything. He showed up, looked at the nothing and said, oh, well, let's have some light, and carried on from there. Both of those stories are total nonsense, and both of them serve to remove the individual from the seat of power and create their experiencing themselves as a tiny satellite in a massive universe that someone else created and is being controlled and operated by forces that are not only outside of our direct influence, but are unknowable because they're just beyond anything we can possibly comprehend or understand. That's total nonsense. The fact of the matter is, this is the waking dream. And it's very analogous to the sleeping dream. When you go to sleep, you create a whole reality. And you experience yourself as being in the reality being all around you. There's everything you'd expect in a reality. There's people, there's places, there's things, there's events going on, some of which are pleasant, some of which are unpleasant. But no matter how pleasant or unpleasant the dream is, when you wake up, the whole thing disappears because it only existed in your mind. And then we wake up to this, the waking reality, and we think, this is real, in contrast to the dream, which is only a dream. But in fact, this is the waking dream. And we are only always experiencing the reality where we're in the center. You know, we make a lot of assumptions like, you know, what I'm experiencing is the same as what you're experiencing. But it's not. I'm experiencing
reality. It's not a simultaneous experience. It's a different perspective. Like, for example, one person looking at the same hill from the opposite side of the hill as you technically is looking at the same objects, but they're looking at two completely different things.
I remember sitting on the front porch of this old house we lived in. We were in Portland, Oregon. We were right on the park blocks, which is the where the university campus is. And I'm sitting on the porch of this rather decrepit house that was to be actually condemned within a year. And I'm sitting on the porch and I'm looking up on the hill at these beautiful houses. And there was this one house with a harp in the picture window. It was just gorgeous to behold. And it was just nestled beautifully in the mountains. And I thought, who's got the better seat? Them looking down at this house that's about to be condemned, or me sitting on the front porch looking out at that beautiful house. So, yes, even though we seem to be in the same reality, we're having a very different experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, does that mean that experience itself only really gets, well, experienced through your perspective? Or is it possible to change your perspective, like to actually adopt somebody else's in a very literal way? Because I know that we can all influence how each other thinks and feels and activates simply through the words of our voice or our actions or our art or something along those lines. You can invoke certain responses in people. But is it possible to even really get inside somebody's head and actually feel precisely what they're feeling and see precisely what they're seeing?
Hey, you brought up something very interesting and important, Vinny, because actually most of us, until we wake up, are constantly attempting to adopt other people's viewpoints in order to be accepted and fit in. You know, one of the earliest drives that we have, and it shows up very obviously in school children, is wanting to be accepted and fit in. So we're constantly asking the question, okay, how do I have to be to fit in? So we perceive how other people see things, and we realize that if we pretend to see things the way they see things, then they'll be comfortable with us and accept us, and we'll be part of the group, and we'll be popular. Okay? But in fact, is it possible to see, to adopt another person's viewpoint? Not really. All right? It's only possible to truly be your own viewpoint and from that center expand to where you can include the other person's viewpoint without identifying with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, it's kind of like going into a principal's office when you've been, and this has happened to me, by the way, been accused of a crime that you haven't committed. And you saying, look, this never happened, okay? I'm completely innocent. The other person's totally making it up, okay? They lied. And the principal says, well, you know, I completely understand your position. You're suspended.
Vinny, realistically, were you really totally innocent?
Yes, I was. I'll tell you the exact thing. Okay, we were sitting around, and I was like, I think I was like 16 or something, discussing the concept of racism, right? And just over this exact discussion about what perspectives are, and I was there with a Maori girl and a guy from South Africa and me, and I said, you know, how do different races actually express their racism, you know? And I came up with the conclusion that when Caucasian racism, if it's against blacks or Jews or whomever, they usually use jokes to belittle and demean the other race, right? And I was wondering if that phenomenon was the same when Maori, who are racist against whites, say the exact same thing, you know? And the Maori girl asked me to say an example of a racist joke. And I said, okay, well, just for the sake of argument, there is a joke. What do you call a Maori on a clothesline? A Maori go round. Now, completely humorless, not funny at all. I'm just doing it for the point of discussion. She then went to the principal and said that I'd told her that Maoris were all on the dole, none of them worked, and they were all bums anyway, and I got suspended.
Right.
And interestingly enough, when I went to get backed up, the other people who were sitting at the table, the other people in the class, they said, nah. That's what you said, Vinny. And I was like, what's going on here? And it turned out that everybody just didn't like me anyway. So they found an excuse to get rid of me for 3 days.
Yeah, you got caught up in the political correctness washing machine. Mm-hmm. Vinny, you know, it's true that we use humor to subtly disrespect or cast in a poor light, you know, people that we consider ourselves to be in competition with. But it's also true that when we really feel close to someone and we love them and appreciate them and totally include them in our lives, We also bust their chops a lot. You know, I discovered that when as I was growing up, when people really like you, they call you names. You know, they give you funny nicknames and they make jokes about you. And, you know, keep in mind that only a black can call another black a nigger. You know, if any of us use the word, that's definitely a faux pas. Okay. Italians call each other, you know, guineas and wops and dagos. Okay. So if you're part of the group, then you can joke about the group. But if you're not part of that group, then it's not politically correct to say anything that's at all disparaging or demeaning. And
you see, now that was the thing. I was trying to have a calm, nice, rational discussion about a serious subject, and somebody decided to take it personally. And that is the danger that you take, isn't it, Tony, when you're dealing with people like that?
They took it out of context. And, you know, certainly if you're, whenever you have three or more people, you're involved in politics. All right, so you have to be aware of what you're saying and carefully phrase it in a way that minimizes the possibility of people hearing something different than what you're saying. Because in terms of your influence on other people, it's not what you say, it's what they hear that influences them.
It's like it's like language is sort of like a protein structure that has to have 63,000 parts all assembled in the correct order in order to make the right protein in the body. So too, the words out of your mouth have to come out in a particular sequence and order so that the interpretation of what you say can't be taken in any other way. Right?
Right.
And this is a difficulty, though, because the protein building, for example, that's something that our body innately knows how to do and automatically does it. But to learn to communicate in such a way that it cannot be misinterpreted, I don't know. Sometimes I like the misinterpretations because some of them are freaking hilarious. Other ones get you suspended.
In either case, you're going to end up in the principal's office a great deal. Vinny, this is exactly why linguistics is such a powerful study, and neurolinguistics, the relationship between language and the nervous system, is so important. I mean, someone understands the relationship between language and the nervous system, and they totally comprehend the linguistic context in which the other person is experiencing life, then they can choose their languaging appropriately so that they elicit the proper or the desired response from that individual. You know, each language is not just an interpretation or a transliteration of every other language. The language of a people actually embodies their ethos. It embodies their innate viewpoint on reality and how they see things. In you don't really understand the people until you can dream in their language, okay? And while, you know, we know there's a difference between English and French and German and Greek, et cetera, the different peoples, even in the same, within the context of the same language, they think differently. You know, blacks phrase themselves differently than whites, and educated whites express themselves differently than lesser educated whites, etc. So you have to understand somebody's language. You know, for instance, when I grew up, bad was good. You know, people say, "Oh man, that is bad." You know, which meant it was good. Okay, I remember at Georgetown University, I got a call from a fellow William Livingston, Washington, right? And this fellow spoke with an English accent and very cultured. And I thought, certainly I'm talking to an Englishman. Well, when I met him and he turned out to be black, I was totally taken aback because I grew up with black people talking like this, you know what I mean? And because this person spoke differently, I assumed he was a white English person. I began to realize that my experience was definitely setting the parameters of my perception. And as my experience expanded, I began to relax my expectations.
Yep. And I always say, Tony, that the secret to happiness is to have really low expectations. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Tony Minervino from the Awareness Party here in New Zealand. And we'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go. 'Cause we can't see
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future from the fabulous fluoridated capital and the second most shakingest city in New Zealand. It's Auckland, and my fabulous and marvellous and somewhat awesome special guest and various other nice adjectives as well is Tony Minervino from the Healing Business. Welcome back.
The shakingest city, eh?
Second most shakingest.
I haven't felt much shaking, but I feel absolutely safe and secure sitting on top of 47 active volcanoes.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps your bum warm. Now,
you know, which brings up an important point. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, where is the safe place to be? And my answer is always the same. The only place to be is where you're excited about being. Follow your excitement. You know, you're not going to be able to figure out with your mind where to be or what to do or what's going on. The mind is absolutely hardwired to third density. If you're using your mind to figure out what's going on here, this time of unprecedented transformation and change, you're going to be here for a very long time. In fact, you're going to be here after the rest of us have moved on to a higher frequency of reality. You know, it's the heart-mind coherence that allows you to be in that frequency of excitement. And in the frequency of excitement is where life is. It's where life is happening. And wherever life is going, if you're in excitement, you're going with it.
Now, Tony, have you ever met somebody who has, say, spent a lot of time learning something which they don't actually enjoy and spent copious amounts of money on it? For example, getting an education in a subject that you're not actually particularly interested in, and they waste a whole period of their life only to wind up going off and doing something completely different later on once they realize that they have to follow their heart.
First of all, I don't think we ever make any wrong decisions, and I don't think we ever waste any time. And everything you learn adds a dimension to your perception of what's going on. You know, so while you might pursue a study which turns out to not be your career choice, it still contributes to expanding your viewpoint so that you're able to more completely comprehend the human experience.
I mean, yeah, I know. But the problem is, I think it mostly helps you to completely comprehend what being $110,000 in debt is like.
Well, you know, there's always the possibility of looking at what's the limitation here, but there's also the possibility of looking at what's the opportunity here. What opportunity is this presenting for me? What doors are opening up for me as a result of the choices I've made? You know, and which door excites me most to walk through? And if you choose excitement, then you're in the frequency of excitement, which leads you into the next now moment of choice. And because you chose excitement in the last moment of choice, you're inclined to choose excitement in this moment of choice. That's how you live an exciting life, Vinny. You'll never live an exciting life by choosing what you think you should do or must do. That's called obligation. You know, whenever you say yes to something that doesn't excite you, you're choosing to experience a context which is not resonant with your heart. You know, that's what I mean by how important it is to come into that place of mind-heart coherence, where your thinking is actually consistent with who you are at a heart level.
Is that something that people innately know, or is that something that you kind of have to go through an entire journey to find out? I mean, do you believe in past lives and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, we've been here many times before, and it's kind of like each life is just remembering who you are again?
Yeah, well, whether we've been here many times before or we just remember many different lives, which either we or someone else live, we have access to, it doesn't really matter. You know, I don't get that wrapped up in what's happened before. I'm more interested in what's happening right now, because now is the moment of choice. In this now moment, I have a choice. I can choose love, or I can choose fear. I can choose expansion, or I can choose contraction. I can choose trust, or I can choose worrying about the possibility of a reality I don't prefer being most likely. In fact, that's how I define fear. I define fear as trusting that a reality I don't prefer is most likely. And I define doubt as an unswerving trust that a reality I do not prefer is most likely. You know, in every given moment, you get to choose how you want to see things. And I choose to see things in a way that opens up possibilities for expansion.
Well, you know what? I kind of resonate with that a little bit, Tony, because, you know, the idea of getting anything accomplished means by its very nature that the predominant thought in your head is, how can I accomplish this and then doing it, not what are the impediments to me accomplishing this and then thinking about it.
Exactly. What are the possibilities? What can I do right now to move in the direction of realizing, you know, this desired goal? Absolutely. And I see goals not necessarily as objectives to be achieved at all costs. I see goals as putting something out in front of you to get you moving in a certain direction. Because as you move in that direction, you can see things that you can't see from where you're standing. So a goal is not necessarily something you're absolutely going to achieve. It's just something to get you moving in a direction that allows you to see things that you can't see from where you're standing. You know, I mean, who amongst us knows what the real purpose of life is? I mean, I don't. I mean, I define the purpose of life for myself. But, you know, who knows what's really going on? I mean, the reality is, Benny, as we sit here talking, we're on a planet that at the equator is revolving at over 1,000 miles an hour. All right, and that planet is circling a sun, which is 93 million miles away, and the circumference is, what, pi r squared? So how fast do we have to go to get around the sun every year? And then the sun is in a dance with Sirius, and those two stars are dancing around a central star, and then the galaxy is in a dance with all the other galaxies around some other central sun, and the whole universe is moving off in a certain direction, expanding while it's going towards an unknown destination for an unknown reason. And we are all crew on a spaceship that's on this magnificent journey, and
And some people on that spaceship, I mean, they have no purpose. They're basically just Klingons. And, you know, and I was just thinking about this, is that when you come to try and understand things, some people get to the point where they think that they understand everything. And I thought, you know, that's just really strange, you know, you can't ever understand everything. The man who thinks he understands everything obviously knows nothing. And the man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough.
Yeah, well, knowing, experiencing that you know everything is the domain of the ignorant. But nonetheless, while, you know, none of us understand everything, we have a choice in every moment to decide that we know what we need to know or we don't. And if you know what you need to know in every now moment, you're confident that your choices are perfect and your actions are perfect, right? And while they may not always have comfortable results, nonetheless, they allow you to have an experience that enables you to access the knowledge it's time to access right now. So, we each get to choose, are we okay or are we not? Are we properly positioned or are we not? Are we doing what it's appropriate for us to do or are we not? It's just a simple choice.
What about age here, Tony? Because some people, if they say like 35 and they got a kid or something like that, they'll belittle me for how I think and how I do things, just saying, "Oh, you're just young, you just don't get it yet." That kind of ageism, I think, isn't there just that many isms that you can discriminate with everybody off? I think that we discriminate against each other to the point where we're trying to paralyze others because we're afraid of thinking that we're the only ones not going anywhere.
Yeah, I picked up a quote a couple of weeks ago. It said, "There's nothing wrong with today's teenagers that 20 or 30 years won't cure."
and if you're still optimistic by the time you're 60, you must be off your rocker, But to be optimistic while you're young is natural.
Well, 60 used to be ancient. Okay, when I was growing up, 40 was old. All right, and it really was. I mean, because 40-year-olds back then look a lot different than 40-year-olds look today. I mean, we are not aging at the same pace. I think we get old as our viewpoint gets solidified and fixed. But if we remain open-minded and we're going with the flow of life, you just naturally maintain that youthful outlook. And that youthful outlook, which is a decision you make within, expresses itself without, and you just age differently. I mean, there are people that are in their 60s that don't look it. And there are people that in their 40s that look old. So it really depends on your mental state, the choices you're making at a mental level.
Well, Will, he was talking about some 20-year-old girls who go out and get drunk every night and smoke like a pack of cigarettes a day, and they look like they're approaching 40 and they're not even out of their mid-20s yet. and it's like the amount of damage you could do to yourself. And I coined a term, the 7 visible signs of nihilism.
Yeah, well, there's the other side of it too, and that is people that are always choosing excitement in every now moment. They're in a state of excitement. They're in the frequency of excitement, which again is the frequency where life is. So they're constantly going to be perfectly expressing the life that they are here to express. I mean, because that's really the gift that each of us bring to the party is who we are. And that's why it's so essential to be authentic. Oscar Wilde said, you got to be yourself because everyone else is taken. And as long as you're identifying with someone else as being superior to you, you're trying to be them and you're not authentically being yourself. So once you make the choice that, hey, I am the perfect who I am and how I see things is perfectly valid. And my viewpoint is just as valid as anyone else's viewpoint. And when you reach that state where you're okay, then you're willing to communicate who you are to everyone around you. And that's what allows for a productive conversation. Because until you're willing to be vulnerable and reveal who you are to the other, you're just allowing them to have an elaborate conversation with themselves.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right there, Tony. I'm taking that to the next level, one of my beliefs is that my opinion essentially does not matter because I don't, in my opinion, I don't originate any of the thoughts that I have. I mean, they're simply amalgamations, combinations of other people's thoughts that I've learned and been influenced by and then putting a recombination. So I don't claim to be original. I don't claim to be different or anything. It's just the same as everybody else. And I think that everybody else's opinion is actually more valuable to me than my opinion, because my opinion shouldn't matter quite so much to me because I know what it is, I know how I mean something, but for some reason, other people think that my opinion matters to them less than it matters to me. And it's just that, that misunderstanding when I talk about something with people that are controversial or something on those lines. I'm just doing it as a means of talking about a particular topic that I find interesting, and I'm more interested in what they've got to tell me about it than what I've got to say about it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know what you're saying, but nonetheless, Benny, you have your own personal viewpoint. I mean, let's face it, you're unique, just like everybody else, and you have your way of seeing things. So your viewpoint very definitely matters.
Okay, fair enough. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross deserts, bare man.
Welcome back! Travel, I've had my share, man. This show is going out everywhere, man, including to New Zealand. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. It basically really means an awful lot, you know? For some reason, people find it ironic that you can wind up talking to people and agreeing about things in such terrible times. My very special Kiwi collaborator for today, Tony Minovino from The Healing Business in Auckland, joins us now. Tony, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Yeah, you know, there is no disagreement, and we're all ultimately in agreement. You know, we all have a viewpoint. We're all seeing things uniquely, and as we're able to share that with each other, it allows us all to, you know, expand our viewpoint. You know, once you're comfortable holding your own viewpoint and you're secure in your own viewpoint, then you can allow other people to hold their viewpoint without feeling threatened, and that's what allows us all to begin to experience how each of us is an essential part of a whole thing. And it's as we are able to embrace each other's viewpoint that we more and more progressively begin to experience the whole thing. And our reality expands.
Well, an expansive experience, right? That's the real goal here. If you're going to experience anything, you want to experience it fully so you feel like you're not missing out, right? And people, for some reason, they think that because they've got all this choice that they're not missing out on anything. I think that because we've got so many choices, most of which are completely worthless to our life experience in a lot of ways, that people really are missing out by having such a lot of it. Now, that doesn't mean to say that we should have some kind of a communist crackdown on political activity or anything of sorts. It simply means that for some reason, and I believe the reason is multifaceted, just like the agenda to control and exterminate the world, we have a society now that for some reason doesn't want the full experience. They're actually quite happy for less than their money is worth buying for, you know?
Well, I don't purport to know what the whole of society is choosing. But I don't think that any choice is inappropriate. I don't think any choice is wrong. You know, I think every choice we make allows us to have an experience which enables us to access the knowledge that is time to access right now. And, you know, whenever someone presents to me in the office and says something like, my life isn't working. And, you know, I say, you know, what do you mean? And they say, well, you know, there's things showing up and there's things not showing up that, you know, I said, look, if you can walk in, sit down and complain that your life isn't working, it's very definitely working. You know, and one guy just refused to get it. I said, well, look, what would have to show up in your life for your life to be working? And he listed all those things, and I showed him the list. And I says, anything more to add to the list? He goes, no, that was all present. My life would be working. And I asked him, I said, do you realize how many people had all these things in their life who died today? Their life is not working. If you can sit here and complain, your life is very definitely working. And the fact of the matter is, if you look around you and the universe is still present, you know that everything's perfect. Because the whole is made up of all these integrated parts. And if even the smallest subatomic particle was out of perfect relationship with every other subatomic particle, the whole universe would go into collision mode. The very fact that we're here and it's now means that everything is perfect. There is absolutely nothing to worry about.
Yeah, that's what I always say. There's nothing to worry about. Go and ambush them politicians. Go and ambush those people, you know. The camera's mightier than the sword, and you can accomplish a heck of a lot more by being cheeky than by being violent and aggressive.
Well, you know, what's outside us is always only a reflection of what's inside us. And what has to change and what must change and what is changing is what's going on between our ears. Because it's the thoughts that we choose to entertain that cause us to see things in the way we're seeing them. And whenever we're coming from fear, whenever we're entertaining a thought that's below the frequency of excitement, you know, then we're experiencing separation, and we're perceiving the potential problems. Okay, but when we're in excitement and we are in that frequency of love, if you will, we realize that everything is present, everything is perfect, exactly the way it is, and that there's absolutely nothing to be concerned about. There's nothing to worry about. You know, just do whatever it is that excites you to do, and just experience life unfolding. It's an eternal thing. You know, it had no beginning. It has no end. We're multidimensional infinite beings. We've always been here. The idea that we began at some point is just an idea. And the idea that we end at some point is just an idea. And if that's an idea that excites you to experience, go ahead and experience it. I choose to experience that we have no beginning, we have no end, we just are. And there's nothing in my experience that indicates or provides evidence that that's ever going to change.
Well, I think that's a grand point to. I think that's a grand point to leave it on, Tony. I'd like to thank you extremely for coming on and being up so early on this fabulous day in the sunny slave capital of Auckland, New Zealand. Fire out your websites.
It's thehealingbusiness.com.
Thehealingbusiness.com. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. That wraps it up for another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you want to check out the archives, either at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, where we post up the archives each day, commercial-free, for your listening and intellectual brain-spasming pleasure. Because, you know, get your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy. And even if you don't agree with everything that we talk about on this show, don't listen to it every day. Just listen to the shows that you really do want to be a part of. Because let's face it, when it comes to New Zealand, there is no choice in alternative media. It is all the same, and we've got to push out the ideas that are original and fun. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll see you again sometime.